Welcome to the Decentralized Consciousness Podcast. Today, this episode is actually a bit of a throwback to the Conscious Parenting series that I was releasing over a year ago now. There's actually a few episodes that have still yet to be edited and released, and after the birth of our daughter, it kind of fell on the back burner. So I'm excited to be diving back into these episodes and bringing them back to all of you. This first one here today is with Hurley B, and he and I have an excellent conversation about divine femininity and masculinity, as well as Christianity and what it means to be raising a child in the fiat consciousness. So let's get into it. Hello, my fellow Sovereign Nodes. Before we get started today, I wanted to make a quick mention about the one-on-one healing sessions that are being offered by members of the Decentralized Consciousness community. There are currently 7 of us that are offering these amazing sessions. I've done multiple with each member and have found that in each case, they have met me with their specific unique talents exactly where I needed it, what and with what I needed help with. If this at all resonates with you, sparks your curiosity, check out bitcoin-consciousness.com/sessions and reach out to one of us. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. So, and that's probably a great place to start. So before we get further in, I'll just, you know, for those, just starting the podcast, I want to introduce Hurley B on the Conscious Parenting series here. Really appreciate you coming on. And I think I want to start with in a little bit of a direction that I didn't really warn you about, but it's something that I was recently thinking about because my son, actually, who's 2 years old, he had mentioned it. And it was, don't talk to strangers. And I've been thinking about that quite a bit, this concept of don't talk to strangers and what it means to our kids. What do you think?
Yeah, that's actually really interesting because we have thanks for having me, by the way, and great to be here, and it's an honor to be here. But so we have a book, I don't know if you've heard of them, The Berenstain Bears, that I've read my two young daughters. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old and one on the way that's due in March, another girl.
Yes, congratulations, because we also have a girl coming in February.
Amazing. Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
One of the books was called Strangers or something, and it's all about, you know, being careful who you talk to, and they could be bad apples, you know, that kind of thing. And it is interesting, and me and my wife both kind of snickered at it a little bit, because I think these were written in the 80s or something, and that seemed to be a time when all of a sudden they were trying to fearmonger parents a little bit about kids could get kidnapped, or that there's bad people out there and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, in a way, I think it's important to, you know, for your kids to be obviously aware of, you know, evil or bad out there, but I don't think teaching them to be afraid of people.
Yeah.
Right. And being afraid to approach them, right, is not, I don't think it's a good way to because what it does is it pumps fear, right? If anything, if you don't want your kids to live in fear of other people. So exactly. I would push against that for sure. And I think there's a balance to it. But I don't think you want your kids to be afraid of strangers.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's similar to kind of like the mask aspect of, you know, every single person being required to wear a mask. There's an underlying fear and negativity that comes with seeing every stranger that you come across having something across their face because they could be carrying some dangerous germ that could, you know, that could murder you. And it's like, it's the same type of thing to think, to have this belief system instilled that every single person, there's something to fear about them. And I think that is a very, I think it's a very unhealthy and backwards way to look at the world, because rather than encouraging kids to be confident in the world and be confident in their ability to discern whether or not something is dangerous and make decisions for themselves, they instead are taught to just be scared of everything. And then if you're scared of everything, then you can't get hurt. And so there's really a couple things. It's like, first of all, we cannot get hurt. We should not take the risk of ever getting hurt. And we also shouldn't trust ourselves to be able to discern whether or not something could be dangerous.
Yeah, it's this safety culture, right? It's this, and I think you brought a really good point about with the masks, where they're pushing this thing where to be safe, you just need to put this thing on your face at all times, even if there's no evidence that you're sick or that someone else is sick. And it's kind of the same thing with the strangers. It was actually a good comparison, because it's assume that these people, there's something to fear with these people before. It's like the guilty until proven innocent thing, right? It's like, I think you gain a lot more from going out into the world pushing love out there than fear, right? So if you're going to go around and with a smile on your face and approach people and, you know, assume that there's, because there's goodness in everyone, right? It's not, like, to assume that automatically a stranger is going to be bad, you know, is, I think that's a really, really dangerous way to live your life. And it's, I think it's a recipe for, you know, that, I think that's how things reflect back to you in that way, right? Fear is bad things end up happening because you're pushing that out there into the universe.
Yeah. I heard something on a podcast recently, which was just a really simple thought experiment, which was, why do we put locks on our doors? And, you know, if you treat that question like a child and just continue asking why, you are going to arrive at the conclusion that we are so scared of other people that even though 99% of other people are good, you're scared of that one-off chance that somebody's going to come into your house and steal your stuff or hurt you. And it's this fear.
I don't know what it is about modern culture that did that, but you're right. It's around the time when, like, I don't know if it was when cities, but it's like everyone started putting a lock on their door. And you'll find if you go to small towns, they don't lock their doors, right?
Right.
Which is interesting. So it's almost like...
Yeah, I mean, we'd leave our keys in the car in the driveway.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's like a population density thing, maybe, or like I guess it's a psychological thing, when and probably comes down to a lack of community as well, right? Because when you live in a small community where you know everyone and you trust everyone, and you don't, there's no need to lock your door. There's no need to, you know, be afraid of, there is no strangers really, right, in that setting, right? In a community setting. So I think, you know, we can talk about that, but I think that's a big part of our culture being so messed up, is that we've come so far away from community, from you know, having members of a community work together and be there for each other. And
yeah, it seems like there's the family life, there's the friends, and that's pretty much it. It doesn't seem like there's any credibility given to any other adult who doesn't have some sort of license or degree, you know, a stranger, basically. There's no credibility in what they, in their opinion. In Ben Franklin's autobiography, he talks about how his dad would pull like random people off of the street and invite them over for dinner. And, you know, this could be somebody who's highly accredited and highly clouded, has a lot of status in society, and there were people who were, you know, homeless and maybe a little bit off their rockers. But, you know, to invite these people into his home, it gave him such a broad range of perspectives and different ways to look at the world. I thought that was just so cool.
That's amazing. That goes with the thing that everyone, no matter what, has something to teach you, right? Like, you can learn something from everyone in this world, no matter what their background, what their current situation. I think that's really cool. That sounds like a great autobiography. I got to read that.
yeah, I would highly recommend checking it out. The one thing I wanted to ask you about is if you've noticed that when you approach other kids, that like at a certain age, they start to become sort of withdrawn into themselves. They're much more sort of leery of talking to you if they don't know you. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, I think a part of that is demeanor for sure. Like if you're a little bit more, cause I was always really, really shy as a kid, especially mm-hmm. with adults, but I'm not sure if that was something that was just kind of naturally in me, or if it was, I mean, I think it's probably a little bit of both, but a little bit in me, yeah. and a little bit shaped through our society, right? And like our surroundings. Cause I know like in public school, like you're taught that there's the teacher and they're the boss and you know,
yeah,
that it's almost like subservient to them a little bit and always afraid to, you know, fall in line, you know, wait to answer when you're spoken to or when you're asked something. So I think I know a big reason or one of the many reasons why I'm not putting my girls in traditional school is because I don't want them to, you know, think that adults are just authority figures and that they need to, in that, you know, I've just heard anecdotally too, that people that are homeschooled, they have a lot more, as they get older, they're a lot, they tend to be a lot more comfortable, like, you know, looking adults right in the eye when they speak to them, engaging them like other human beings, not like an authority figure, which I think is healthy and good for kids. I think that's, mm-hmm. For them to learn that they can speak to an adult. Like obviously, you know, you should speak with respect and all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, you have to be careful not to make it so that like you say, they kind of like withdraw and put their heads down and don't look people in the eye. And yeah, I don't know. I'm curious if you, because you have a son. How old is your son?
He's 2 years old. Yeah.
Okay, two. So I guess you haven't had to really think about schooling and all that kind of stuff quite.
Yeah, you know, we're definitely not forced to that. However, I know that if we don't do anything, like if we don't begin researching and considering other modes of education, the default is the public school system. And through conversations like this one and learning about, you know, all these rabbit holes that Bitcoin has taken me down, learning about the public education system and seeing what it's done, you know, the one comparison while we're on the topic that I wanted to make is, so my son, he goes to daycare right now, and it's a really great daycare. They teach him a ton of stuff. I think they really encourage him to be himself. You know, at some point, obviously, it turns from daycare into more of like an educational school type structure. So we'll maybe have to reassess how we do it. But anyway, you go into that classroom to drop him off and pick him up, and all the other 2-year-olds in that room, I want to say that 9 out of 10 of them are willing to run right up to you and talk to you and smile at you and are just so confident and happy in who they are. And this isn't to say that if a child is reserved and doesn't want to run up to you, that it's just a bad thing, because absolutely there are people that are more reserved and that's just who they are comfortable being. They may not want to communicate. They may not have as much to say, whatever. But the point is that I can see this like natural confidence that these kids have as 2-year-olds. And again, it's in the majority when the child gets older and I notice my interactions with them, it's like maybe 3 out of 10 are still willing to come up to you. And, you know, these are like maybe 6 and 7 year olds. They're as willing to come up to you and talk to you and smile at you and this kind of thing. And I think a lot of that has to do with the public schooling. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the belief that's being taught that every single adult, if you don't know them, if your parents haven't okayed your interaction with them, that they are immediately someone to be afraid of. And it causes the child to kind of withdraw in and, you know, become, you know, subservient to their presence. And I think that there is something to be reapproached there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, if anything, you know, like I think back to my childhood too, there's a point, where you're expected to not be a kid anymore. And you're not, you know, you kind of lose that,
yes,
you know, that creative lust for life, and that, just everything is new and exciting and cool. And then you at such a young age, you're expected to just sit down at a desk, listen to a teacher, do your homework, you know, write your tests, learn your, you know, it's such a young age. Like I realized that, like my girls are 5 and 3, like I said, and so I was lucky that my oldest, basically during the pandemic, was when she would have started public school. And we were planning to put her into public school. Yeah. That was our plan. Like we didn't really think anything, you know, outside that, really.
Right.
I mean, we knew deep down inside that the education system was broken in a lot of ways, but we didn't really know what that meant and how to fix it. Right. But we were lucky that, here in Toronto, where we are, it was one of the only places in Canada. They made it mass mandates for junior kindergarten and senior kindergarten. So the first 2 years of school, she was going to be forced to wear a mask.
No way. That's crazy.
And so that was an easy decision for me. Like immediately I was like, she's not going to junior, you know, she's not going to kindergarten. Like, we'll just homeschool her, like, you know. And my wife, you know, was resistant a little bit to it because I think she knew deep down inside, she was like, no, like even now she's like, there's no way I could have sent her and forced her to wear a mask in school. But anyways, we were lucky that so neither of them have been inside a public school at all. And that has kind of led us down a rabbit hole of learning alternate forms of education.
Yeah. So how's the homeschooling going?
Well, so we started basically the first year. My wife would just do kind of like simple stuff, because it's you know, in kindergarten you learn very basic stuff, and I think play is super important. Like they do a lot of like art, you know, art and all that kind of stuff. So she would do crafts with them, and she would do, you know, some basic stuff that they would learn. Like she has some friends that are kind of in the education system, so she would ask them what they learn in kindergarten. But since then, though. So the first year or so, or maybe a little bit more than half a year, not quite a year, my oldest was being homeschooled, and we went and lived in Costa Rica for a while and did it from there. And then we came back to Canada, and we found a group of like-minded parents basically they go to school. Both of them now are going to a school in someone's basement where there's like six or seven kids and a teacher that is.
Yeah, it's like a micro school, I think.
Yeah, it's like a little pod, right? They call them pods or micro schools. And she's basically trained in the Montessori kind of style of teaching, which is, I feel like it's like halfway between, it's you know, kind of traditional schooling, but with kind of a modern twist to it a little bit.
Yeah, Montessori is really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. So my nephews did the same thing. So they're both in that right now. My 3-year-old as well, she did a year even before she started, started kindergarten. So she's kind of ahead of other kids, right? Mm-hmm. She already knows, you know, she's doing her numbers and her letters and all that. And she's only 3 years old. So,
yeah.
So that's going well so far, but we know it's not going to last forever. And we're open to, you know, I want to learn more about kind of the unschooling method and I think this is better for when they get older, where it's almost like a self-directed education, and you only really have like an hour or two max of focused actual learning time. And the rest is kind of like, they learn what they are interested in and what drives them and what kind of sparks passion in them, which I think is really, really cool. So there's like you said, there's a lot of different, you know, rabbit holes and different types of non-traditional education, to go down, and there's a lot for us to learn too. Like, our girls are still young. We know that it's going to be a continuous journey, but
I have a lot to say on the education subject. I you know, I was doing carpentry and remodeling for a few years, and I studied engineering in school and was always good at school. I was really good at school, and I was able, because I was able to follow direction well, I was able to pass the tests because I was able to memorize. I was able to memorize processes. Math was something that kind of came pretty natural to me. But once I decided to sort of take the leap into a new career direction, outside of construction, but also just in, I wanted to build a business that would allow me the flexibility to have more time to be with my kids. And in doing that, it sent me down all kinds of rabbit holes, and it was very enlightening for me, because the biggest thing that I realized is that I have been programmed so strongly to feel a sense of accomplishment when I do something that someone else expects of me or someone else asks of me, that when I don't have that, I am completely lost. I was just completely lost. And it was so frustrating, because it's like, I've been doing this my entire life, and now I have the opportunity to do whatever it is that I want. I'm in a very fortunate position that my wife, her income is able to sustain us without me, you know, having to work 40 hours a week. So I have the ability to basically build a business and, you know, to take time to figure out what it is that I want to do. It's a very fortunate position. But once I'm in this position, and I would encourage anybody to really consider these aspects, as if you were in the position where you've got, let's say, all the money you would ever need. You don't have to worry about money. What would you do? What would you do right now? What would you choose to be doing? And for me, I had such a hard time figuring out what that thing was. And I think it was because of my public education and the way that I was so used to life being structured. And I believe that every human being should have the opportunity to just do what they want to do. But we're not like trained to have the confidence in ourselves to follow our highest self and to be, you know, to follow our passions and our interests. Because the second that I would consider anything that was even remotely interesting to me, there was all these programs that wanted to come up that would talk me out of it, all of these fears. And it was incredibly frustrating. And I definitely place a large amount of the blame on public schooling and the expectations of other people through that system.
Yeah. And they also, it's as you get older and as you get into high school, they also, you know, whether it's your parents or, you know, because a lot of it is not just the education system, it's the culture around it, right? It's like they push you down a road of being like, well, you have to think about how you're going to make money, right? It's like, so it's like a big fear thing, right? It's like, well, you can't just do anything you want. Like, say a kid wants to be a, you know, a famous baseball player it's like, well, you know, I have a cousin that's a hockey player, and his mom was always like, well, you need to go to school in case that doesn't work out, so you can fall back on something, right? Like, it's all in this fear base, right? Where it's like money. Yeah. It's like, well, you need to worry about how you're going to make money.
Right.
And I totally agree with you that if everyone had this amazing situation where they had enough financial freedom where they could just follow their hearts and just follow what they are passionate about, amazing things would happen. Because, you know, and I think that's awesome what you're doing. You're building a business. You're basically taking a time and being like, I don't need to seek validation or seek approval from anyone else. And it's been tough for you to be like,
oh yeah,
now it's only for me. Like, what do I want to do? What gives me purpose? What gives me meaning? What motivates me? What am I passionate about? And trying to find that with all that programming has probably been challenging, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, scarcity really is an illusion. And we are so trained that we have to fight for we have to fight and compete for everything that we want, you know? And this podcast is my first kind of exploration in this adult playground where I didn't really have an attachment to any outcome. I had kind of a group of people in mind. I had a set, you know, some topics that I wanted to explore, but I didn't necessarily just like want to sit on a computer and do a bunch of research and reading. I wanted to have conversations with people where, you know, I can bounce ideas and hear their perspectives and hear their methodologies on how to approach some of these things. And I hope that, you know, I know that these questions are going to be valuable for other people. And so it's just like, I'm just kind of following my genuine curiosity. And the important thing on the other side that I was always struggling with is the attachment to the outcome. And because the fears that would always come up when it came to something like following a passion is like, okay, how are we going to monetize it? And the fear would be like, well, I can't monetize that thing, or it's not going to happen fast enough or whatever. But in this particular case, I've decided going into it that, you know, any sort of attachment is just a frequency. It's just a filter on the way that I see the world. It's just a program. And I know that what I'm doing is valuable to me. It's fulfilling my curiosity. I know that's valuable to other people. So if it does bring in some of that abundance, that's great. But if it doesn't, that's fine too. It will lead me to the next thing, to the next flow. And the more and more that I do that, the more and more that I see the abundance. And like what I was explaining to you, I was just, before we started recording, I was just blown away by how willing people were to converse with me. Like I just reached out to a group of people, like 5 people last week, and all of them scheduled to do a conversation with me this week. I mean, it was amazing how quickly, you know, it just, and I think that has a lot to do with flow and following my heart, because I was doing something that wasn't forced. It was just something that felt natural to me. It just came, like all these people, all these circumstances came together, and now we're having these really cool, important conversations. And
you put something out there, and you were passionate about it, you cared about it, you put it out there in the universe, and it's reflected back to you, right? Like,
right.
You messaged me, and I hadn't talked to you since the men's group that we had with Sama, and right away it was like, I was like this is like, and I listened to the podcast right away. I didn't notice that the episode before, but I was like, this is something that I've been thinking about. And I think a lot of people, this is like helping people through this crazy big transitional change in humanity, is going to be massive. And I think, yeah. There's so many different ways to look at it and avenues to look at it in, whether it's raising children, whether it's, you know, what you value, and it's just there's so many different ways to look at it. So I think you're right. I think it's just learning from other people, talking to other people, and exploring, being curious. And yeah, I think it's really exciting. It's really cool.
Yeah. So for me going through the spiritual growth that I've been going through, you know, in the past couple of years, I notice a lot of the stuff that I am healing has a lot to do with what I was taught as a child. Do you feel similarly?
For sure. Yeah, it's crazy how many things with your just everyday, you know, your everyday behaviors, your actions, they seem to be stuff that's shaped from, mm-hmm. from childhood, from a long time ago, right? It's like it gets kind of stuck in this groove, and that's just becomes a way that one of your beliefs or one of your patterns or one of your behaviors. And it's been something that I was working with Sama for a while. Actually, I haven't chatted with him in a long time, but I was doing mm-hmm. a lot of that work in the summer, a lot of, you know, meditation and a lot of self-reflection and a lot of, I started doing a lot of the childhood work with him as well, which can be a little scary. It can be a little, cause a lot of that stuff is very buried, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of layers. But I think it's a tool. I think it's useful for sure. I've been going down a slightly different path lately, where I've just looking at the state of the world, and just me having almost now three daughters and a wife. I've been looking at it more of a perspective of me being the father, and kind of like the masculine figure in the family, and how, and the importance of that.
Let's get into that.
Like the protection mechanism of it. So I've kind of been going down that path a little bit more lately, where it's like, because the balance of the spirituality and I think the physical world, like the reality of the world, right? Because I think in human history, a lot of our ancestral, you know, history, it was the strong masculine leader was the protector, right, of the family and the, so I don't know. I've just been kind of going down that path a little bit and just trying to balance the two sides of it, the inner self, the spiritualness, and also the importance of being a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I love this topic. If you're looking at spirituality, or if you're looking at the world through a spiritual lens with 100% trust, you know, kind of like we were talking about before, where we're sort of taught as kids that everyone is to be feared. If you don't know them, everybody is dangerous, this kind of thing. But from the spiritual lens, if you're going 100% trust, then everybody is to be loved. Everybody is to be trusted. And you mentioned a word that stuck out to me, which is a protector. You know, and I feel the very same way. Like I feel a lot of filters on lenses on the world about masculinity and us as men being the providers and the protectors for our family. However, if we're also living from a place of truth and just understanding and belief that the world is abundant and safe and full of love, then there's really no need for us to protect. We actually begin to fill the role of, like you said, a leader, because my models around feminine versus, you know, masculine energy is masculinity is kind of like the energy of direction, the energy of action, whereas the feminine is more the energy of possibility. It's the energy of, it's like the energy of love, and it's like the women naturally pull down all of the possibilities from the ether, and you know, they get excited about them, and then the men were our masculine energy, we're the one that put it into action, we're the one that determined that, you know, this is what we are going to use to guide ourselves.
It's like the balance. It's like I think the balance of the two is like nature's balance in a lot of ways, right? Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a big part of speaking of, you know, our culture and our society being so twisted and broken, is if you pay attention, we've reversed these roles. We've made women more masculine, and we've pushed that as that being a good thing. And we've pushed men being more feminine. And so we've kind of flipped them and confused them a little bit. And I think just a balance of the two energies, not even so much of the sexes, like, but a balance of the two is really important in the home and kind of in society as well. And I think that's kind of been thrown off balance. And I think that's where we see a lot of the chaos that's happening in the world.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, you're right. It what I see as far as kind of the empowerment of the feminine, it's not truly the empowerment of the feminine. It's the, here, if you act like a man, then you're going to be empowered. And, you know, it's about the women. We're watching, there's a Disney movie, Encanto or something like that. I think it's, Encanto is the one. It's the one about the house that's alive. Have you seen that movie?
I don't think I've seen it, but I think I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a character in there who, like, her special ability is that she's super strong. But the thing is she acts like a man. She's got very masculine energy. She's got broad shoulders. Her voice is very deep. And that isn't what empowerment of the feminine is. The empowerment of the feminine is appreciating women for who they are and what they are. So it doesn't mean that to be an empowered woman, you have to act like a man and you have to have masculine energy. And I feel like there's also like a lot of pride wrapped up around the femininity. And so I think where it kind of all starts is we ourselves don't seem to really understand what femininity is. I think femininity is like sort of misguided to be basically solely about sexual energy, at least not like in popular culture, but it doesn't have anything to do, or it doesn't have any understanding of what we were saying earlier, which is, you know, the kind of the order in chaos. Women have the intuition, they have the understanding of all of the possibilities, they have the grace, the beauty, the elegance, and that's not the femininity that is being manifested or amplified in today's world.
Yeah, no, if anything, they're teaching, culturally, we're teaching women that, you know, with feminism, modern feminism and stuff, that they don't need a man, they don't need men. So basically, we're removing that, like, and you know, you wonder why men in this modern age are so I don't even know how to describe it. Just beaten down, nihilistic. They have no confidence in themselves. They have,
right.
Because it's societally, we're teaching women that they don't need men, that you are smart, you are powerful. And I mean, there's truth to that. Like they obviously can do a lot of things, but if you teach a woman or a girl that she can be a man, that she can be, if she wants to be a strong man, she can be a strong man, whether that be, you know, a fighter, an athlete, and she's going to, like, you know, be as strong as she possibly can. All you're going to do is teach her that she, you know, if she puts all of her energy into it, say it is being a fighter or whatever, she will only ever be a weak man, right? Because biologically, she's not a man, right? Like that right. comes from like the female fighters. There's a reason why female fighters don't fight male fighters, because they would lose. So I think what I'm trying to say is that it's like with my daughters, I don't want to teach them that they can do anything a man can do, or that they don't need a man because they are everything a man is and more.
Right.
I want to teach them to embrace the amazing power that like you're talking about, the power of the feminine, because it's beautiful and it's unique and it's amazing. And there's strengths in that. Like, I think the feminine energy is a lot more intuitive. It's a lot easier for them to be in touch with and follow their heart or follow their intuition. So I think if anything, my goal as the masculine kind of leader or father of the house is to embody. And I think this is what I've been trying to work towards too, is be a strong masculine leader, so that I'm giving an example of my girls of what they should look for, the traits they should look for in a man, in a husband as they get older. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Not, yeah. So I think that's basically what I'm working towards is being a good example for my girls. Because I think it's, you know, in our society, it's harder and harder. Like the quality of the men out there is terrible. And I think there's a big reason why, you know, testosterone's dropping like crazy. I think birth rates are dropping like crazy. And so it's just, there's just no options out there. Like the whole weak men create hard times, right? That's where we are right now. So I think if anything, the world needs, a rebalancing of that, and we need to make some stronger men. So
why do you think that I think I think we have a pretty good grasp on maybe why men seem to be weakening from like a societal standpoint. But what do you think about the weakening of masculine energy and masculinity from a spiritual standpoint?
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure out this in my head a little bit. Like, I've been going on quite a journey for the past year where I was doing a lot of the inner work with Sama. And I must say, I have moved away from that a little bit more recently. And it hasn't been a thing of where I'm like, oh, that's a wrong path or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But that's an interesting question, the masculine energy in spirituality. I honestly don't even know how to answer that, because I think if you're in touch with your inner self, you would know whether your inner energy has more of a masculine energy or more of a feminine energy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, because I know you've done a lot of spiritual work as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think from a spiritual standpoint, the last thing that we're kind of taught as men is knowing thyself is like the most important thing that you can do. The major trend today is to continue to acquire more clout, more money, you know, more women. Well, yeah, I think that because, you know, we're sort of being pushed further away from our inner selves, we don't understand. And what ends up happening is it continues to become, because we as men become increasingly frustrated because we don't feel fulfilled. And then also it sort of feels like society as a whole is really attacking masculinity and masculine energy, which therefore then creates this battle. And then in turn creates a negative masculine energy instead of the true masculine energy, if that kind of makes sense.
Right. Cause there's a light and a dark side of both feminine and masculine energy.
Yes.
Right? I agree with that.
Totally.
There's a, you know, in society, we always talk about toxic masculinity, but what about toxic femininity? Like there's both, like you can have, there is a dark side of both, you know, right. There's a flip side of the coin of both. And I think we actually don't talk about the positive aspects of masculinity.
No,
you know, right. Responsibility, virtue, like, you know,
yeah.
Discipline, you know, all mm-hmm. these things.
Yeah.
That I think are really important to a you know, a healthy masculine, like, you know, and that's where a leader comes in too, right? Like, I don't know if you've noticed with your wife, but I like women just in general in say big decisions for the family, they're not equipped to be the in my experience anyways, they're not equipped to be the, you know, final decisive decision maker mm-hmm. for a lot of things.
Right.
I think society tells them that they should be, and I think society tells them that they should be the masculine leaders of the family. And I think mm-hmm. where they fall more into their feminine energy is through following or you know, following the lead of someone who is, you know, more decisive with decision making and confident in their decision making. And I think that mm-hmm. that allows them to fall into kind of their creative and intuitive kind of flow in a way.
Yeah.
Making sense, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're making total sense. It's like, you know, the women have the intuition and this. Yeah, I do, because I've actually joked with my wife about that. It's like, I'm the order and you're the chaos, because she's the one that she's always in touch with her feminine side and her intuition. And it's me that's really following. I'm following her intuition. And, you know, I'm the one that's sort of like executing it on kind of like a rational level. It's like, okay, if we're going to move, who's the one that puts together all of the logistics of moving and physically moving stuff around? I mean, it's almost like in the ideal masculine feminine balance, you know, the women, they're able to bring all these possibilities in. And then we as men are, if we're able to be in touch with our true selves, we can say, we can feel the spark of the right possibility. And we can say, yes, this is the direction we're going to follow. And
yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but a really good example in anecdotally in my experience is, mm-hmm. I love what you said there about the women have, you know, they have the intuition, and it's our job to tap into what their intuition is and turn that into action, right? Because we went to Costa Rica and lived there for 3 months, and then we came back and we wanted to go back again, and then my wife got pregnant, and it was all like, oh, should we just go back to Costa Rica and have the baby there, and just, you know, and we kind of were torn about that for a little bit. And then I could tell from her intuitive energy, to be honest, that she was leaning towards a nesting mentality where she wanted to settle down. She wanted to have some stability. And right away it was easy to, right when I felt that energy that kind of intuition that she had of that being important, I made the decision. I was like, okay, we're going to rent a place here in home, like near our parents. If we're going to nest, we're going to settle down. We're going to get some stability, and we're going to have the baby here. And so that was the decision, and we did that. So it was like, I think it's a perfect example of the balance of the two energies, the order and the chaos, like you say. And I don't want any women listening to think that chaos is only negative, because it's like, it sounds bad to say, oh, they're the chaos and we are the order.
Right. But
it's the balance of the two that you mm-hmm. need to have, you know, a healthy, happy, functioning dynamic. So I think it's really important.
I think we're so far out of balance. It's almost like femininity has been completely erased, and masculinity, if femininity is intuition and masculinity is more rational and directional, you know, we as men, you know, who are primarily kind of running the world and have been for some time with corporations and in politics and all this kind of stuff, and don't have any sense of guidance from our higher self, or from the intuition of femininity, that means we're following guidance from rationality, and rationality at this point in time is guided by fear. If the base layer of everything around us is fear, being afraid that you're going to get hurt or somebody could steal from you or whatever, or that you don't have enough money, you know, then everything that you do is based around those fears. And so that's, I think, what this incredible off balance of energy has created. So yeah, it's like a big difference, because we're moving, I think humanity is moving from a place of relying so strongly on rationality and only rationality to being able to trust women. And what's kind of trust women, but trust femininity, to trust their intuition and trust our own intuition as men as well, and use them as an example. And, you know, the world is fighting back hard for that. It's saying, nope, instead of trusting women for who they are, they instead should be empowered to be like men, and they should be empowered to run corporations and act like men and be strong like men. No, that's not how women should be empowered. Women should be empowered to be themselves.
Because that throws them off their personal balance. And then you get, mm-hmm. and honestly, I'm going to be completely honest. I think a big part of the reason why the reaction to the whole COVID pandemic thing was just pure fear mm-hmm. was because that balance has been so thrown off that when you put a feminine energy in control, in more control over, you know, the logic or the decision making, I think you get a place, you come from a place of fear mm-hmm. and you act from a place of fear. right?
Yeah.
So I think, and I don't want to say, and I'm not going to stand here and say that, like, oh, a reason why we're so upside down is because of women, because I don't think that's true at all. I think it's actually, like, the big part about masculinity is a responsibility. And that's one thing I'm learning, is that as men, you should be, especially if you're going to be like the strong lead, any strong leader takes full on responsibility for everything. Anything bad that happens or anything, that, like, they take responsibility, right? So
yeah,
I think that's a big thing that I'm trying to take on, is not placing blame or shirking, you know, like, when you are a true leader, you take responsibility for everything. And I think a big part of why society is so upside down is a shirking of the responsibility of men. And I think that's why that saying is, weak men cause hard times, because society needs strong men and intuitive and, you know, spiritually grounded women in order to have a healthy balance. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's spiritually grounded people, you know, because masculine energy is, you know, the energy of responsibility and accountability, direction. That is grounded in our highest self. And we, you know, we're living in a reality that I believe is not reflective of the true reality. Truly, true reality is oneness, and everything comes from the same thing, and everything is a singularity. And so when you, this theme of duality basically is encouraging us to figure out how we can live in oneness through duality. That's why
that's the challenge. If we're to believe that everything is one, and I do believe that. I've done a lot of, you know, spiritual work where I do have this belief that we are all connected, we are all one. But the challenging part is that we live in a world of seeming duality, right? Of, you know, I'm here in my body, you're there in your body, and we are separate. There is space separating us, right? So it's mm-hmm. it's like the challenge of trying to figure out a way to, you know, live in a balance of the two and in accordance of the two, right?
So I'm curious, you have a 3 and a 5 year old, and, you know, like with my 2 year old, whenever I feel like approaching anything regarding spirituality with him, because I know that he's old enough to understand most things. I mean, it's incredible how intelligent that children are at such a young age. But I feel sort of like nervous approaching spirituality. So if I were to go to him and, or if I see him crying or something like this, and he's throwing a tantrum, and I try to explain to him, you know, feel your emotions, feel your inner guidance, feel your inner light, you know, take some deep breaths and basically kind of lead him through a little meditation, it makes me feel really uncomfortable. Like, I feel almost kind of new agey and silly. However, at the same time, my son, he was also gifted for this past Christmas, he was gifted like a nativity scene and books about Jesus and this kind of thing. And so I'm curious if you also have similar discomfort and fears in teaching, you know, your kids about spirituality from a non-religious standpoint, but instead from, you know, the oneness standpoint and the sovereign soul standpoint.
Yeah, that's interesting, because our oldest, when she has, you know, temper tantrums, we've tried, you know, doing the deep breaths or, you know, and sometimes when they're in that zone, when they're just so, it's like, they're not very receptive to that. Right. She's mm-hmm. like kind of like breathing all erratically and crying. And
right. And nobody is, right. Even as adults.
Yeah. Even as adults. Right. But I know my wife has tried, because it's become clear to us that our 5-year-old she seems to have something that kind of runs in the family a little bit. My wife, that some underlying anxiety around some things, like around throwing up. She, whenever she's a little bit sick, she's kind of just like frozen in fear of throwing up. So my wife, I know, has tried some meditation techniques. My wife was a social worker. She's not working right now. She's basically a stay-at-home mom now, but just through the COVID stuff, and you know, they would have required her to get a jab to keep her job. So she's just kind of like, she's in a similar position to you actually, and just like trying to focus on, I mean, she's focusing on being a mother, but she also wants to figure out where her passion lies and all that.
Sure. Yeah.
And start a business and all that down the road. But, so yeah, so she's tried meditation stuff with my 5-year-old, but speaking of the religious thing, it's interesting you brought that up. We recently started going to church, like just over Christmas actually. And we haven't gone more recently just because we have swimming lessons on Sunday now, but just like a Christian church. And I've just kind of started to, I slowly over the years have kind of showed an interest in learning about just kind of like from a value standpoint, Christianity and religion. And I'm starting to, just through reading the Bible, and I'm reading another book called, I'm only partway through, called Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Kind of, because he was an atheist, and then he kind of like saw the value in teaching Christian values and stuff like that. So I am going down a little bit of a Christian rabbit hole right now, and I'm not sure what that means, but I do know that from what I'm gathering from it, and maybe it just could be that I'm open to it, and it's how I'm interpreting it now, but I think there's a lot of validity to structuring spiritual teachings around the values that Christianity teaches and stuff like that. So I'm kind of looking into that a little bit, and not from a you know, because our society is very like, oh my God, the G word, you know, God, don't say God, or don't, you know, not, yeah. There's no guy in the sky or just anything about Jesus, right? We're very atheists as a society, right? So that's been interesting for me to come from it from an upbringing of, I was never religious growing up. But I always considered myself spiritual, which was interesting. So right. I feel like I've gone down the spiritual path, and now I'm just kind of, I'm learning a little bit more about the Christian path and more of the religious kind of path. And I think from teaching and just having kids have proper values, I think it's interesting. We haven't like fully decided on how we're going to approach this with our kids, because they're still young. But anyways, yeah, that's just where I'm at kind of on the journey, especially with implementing that on our kids. And I know my wife is teaching, I think meditation is really important. I think it's a tool that can definitely be used, for, especially if you're, you know, really anxious, or if you're, you have a lot of worries or stuff like that. So I think that's going to be a really good tool for her. But besides that, we've told our kids, like, you know, you have a soul. Like, they know about, they've had, you know, people in their, you know, my dad passed this year, and we've had dogs pass in front of them and stuff like that. So they're not shied away from death as well. And so they're very curious about death. And we teach them that your soul lives on, you know, I think that's important, teaching them that. Because when I grew up, I always thought that when you died, the lights just went out, and that terrified me as a kid. And I think that's naive to think that we know that. How could we possibly know that things just end when you die? There's so many things we don't know. So I think just coming at it from a different perspective, from how we grew up, and from the atheist kind of like science view of things, where you die, the lights go out, and that's it. It's over.
Right.
I don't believe that. So I think trying to implement that on our kids, and to maybe not be so afraid and resistant to the idea of death, because it's just as natural as life, right?
Yeah, I mean, death is like a rebirth. I actually stumbled across a near-death experience video. Somebody had gotten the flu or something, and they almost passed away from it. And he was basically talking about how when he died, he felt so at home. I mean, he felt like he felt so much love after he left his body. It was like euphoric. He did not want to go back. He was like, my family, they'll be sad for a couple of weeks, but they'll be over it. You know, just let me stay here. And, you know, obviously he ended up coming back, but you're right. We are so scared of it. And and that's where I think up to this point, the big kind of the problem with centralizing, whether it be religion or science as a religion, as we kind of see it today, is they tend to become something that is basically beyond reproach. Like you can't go to science or somebody of science and be like, well, but what about this thing? Or what about this perspective? And the same kind of sometimes happen with religion. And, you know, so to like, I know that in like Catholicism, there is no belief in reincarnation. And I don't know, like, and if you are to basically to say to that idea that, you know, well, but what if we just considered the possibility that, you know, after I die, I am a soul, and it's not up to God whether or not I choose to be born again, but myself, I am the God, you know, and just the sheer fact that we were
created in the image of God. So you're right. We are.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, so yeah, the religion itself, even there are even teachings within the religion itself that says, hey, you have the power of God. The power of God resides within you. So it's like, well, but if that's true, then why can't I come? I choose to come back, you know, and be born again. And so that's, are you sort of approaching it? I guess basically what you were just telling me is you are approaching it from that way, kind of where, you know, there are the morals and the values of religion, but also the kind of open-mindedness to approaching these teachings too.
Yeah, I think I'm also coming from a perspective too of like, you know, we've been taught growing up that, you know, the birth of the universe was the Big Bang, right? It's just, mm-hmm. So basically we're to believe the miracle birth of the universe, right? Like yeah. That, and that just so happens that just by chance, the Earth was the one planet that had all the, you know, things it needed, the angle of the warmth of the sun and the angle of the Earth towards the sun was just perfect for life to be created. And then,
right.
It just so happened that
just, you know, by coincidence,
just by coincidence. And then also just the craziness of us existing and consciousness existing.
Yeah.
It's like, we see that as like, well, that's how, you know, the Big Bang, that's this, you know, this is fact, this is science fact. And then the idea of there being kind of like a creator or a divine creator is so outlandish and so crazy. Now I've almost like flipped that on my head, because I used to think that way, where it was just like, you know, well, of course, you know, science says that, you know, evolution exists, and that there was a Big Bang, and the universe was created out of nothing, a little speck. And then we were just so happened to evolve and be created, and there's no meaning behind it. It just is, right?
Right.
But right. I don't know. I guess I'm starting to like see it from the other perspective now and be like, well, that, what's more believable? What, like, pick your miracle, that there is, you know, a divine creator that created everything, or that it just came of nothing and there's no meaning behind it, right? Anyways, that's just something that I've kind of been wrestling with in my mind a little bit. And it's, like I said, it's such a huge shift away from how I grew up and how I think our society, like just the information that our society pushes forward, like we almost demonize religion in a lot of ways, which is interesting. Yeah. And I just think that there's more to it. And I'm open to exploring this and seeing if it's a good framework for, because if anything in our society, what we're missing, you know, we seem to be, there seems to be this like tendency towards like degeneracy and, you know, just, we seem confused, mm-hmm. we seem lost. And I think there is something to religion and Christianity that I'm learning about, where it's almost like an anchoring set of principles, values. It's almost like nature's law to live by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, and I see what you're saying, because I had a similar thought about it more recently too, about religion, that, oh, well, spirituality is the decentralized, you know, the we're one with everything is the decentralized version of religion, and religion mm-hmm. is a centralized incarnation of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. The more I've learned about the Bible too, is that it's not, if anything, the way that the Bible came together, interestingly, mm-hmm. was through a bunch of, what do they call that, manuscripts. But so it was basically a decentralized account of things that came
right.
together. Book written by a bunch of different people, right? So in a way that was a decentralized, so it wasn't just one person sitting down and being like, I'm gonna write this Bible and everyone's gonna follow my rules,
right? Yeah.
So anyways, it's just interesting because I have come at it from the perspective of what you're saying now, of what you just said about how religion, organized religion in a lot of ways, and I think that there's a lot of truth to that, is the centralizing corruption of the idea of religion. And I think there's some interesting I think there's a discussion to be had about that, but
yeah, no, I really like the way that you're approaching this, because what you're really encouraging is a study of the actual source material of the Bible itself.
Yeah.
And
I realized I'd never read it. I'd never once read it.
Yeah.
There's these interpretations that other people would give you, but if you just read it yourself and have your own interpretation of it, that's something different, right?
Yeah. And that's what's really amazing to me, is that, you know, this source material has remained so true through, you know, eons and eons and eons of teachings of Jesus and everything that he taught. You know, it's just about love and the powers that we all have. I mean, it's all still there. And
if you look at what even a lot of this like kind of spirituality stuff teaches you about pushing love out there, that's a lot of what Jesus's teachings, they align perfectly with a lot of that stuff of,
right,
you know, love thy neighbor, which is like, you know, respect, you know, it's like the opposite of being afraid of strangers, right? It's like love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right?
And it's just, it basically is like I said, it's like this unspoken, and if you look at all religions too, they all actually carry similar, very, very similar themes of basically a framework of how to live, you know, a principled and a good, basically a good life, how to live a good life. Right. And it's just like a framework to live by. And I think mm-hmm. they all borrow from similar ideas and they have similar origins. Right. So,
yeah.
Anyway, and I think if the modern interpretation of like whether you call it new age spirituality or, I don't know what you'd call it, but there's so many different interpretations. There's so many different incarnations of that as well. Yeah. And I think they are just a modern take on this kind of like this, it's almost in our, I feel like it's in our DNA, this, this draw to nature's law. Like we know, like it's like this idea of what is good and what is evil or what is not good, right?
Right.
Like we know, even kids know, even young children know deep down when they do something and it's wrong, right?
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the way that a child reacts if another child is crying, they immediately know that something is wrong. And so they know immediately that if I make another person cry, that it's a bad, it's not a good thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
like hurting someone else, right? Yeah. At a very young age, they understand that too. Like they, it's like that empathy thing, right? Like they learn it. Mm-hmm. I think they learn it at, what is it, 3 or 4, they don't have much empathy before that, but they learn it and you can even see that when they're watching a show or when they're like the, you know, where there's something sad happens, they feel it. You see it in their face, right? It's like this, it's something unspoken in our DNA, I feel like, that drives us towards. And I think it's easy. I think that's the point too of these teachings, is to show that evil, or, you know, temptation or whatever, it can seem like the good thing, right? Like there's pleasure in it, or there's, you know, whatever it is. But it can seem good, but it's deceiving, right? And it ends up being not fulfilling spiritually or whatever, and it can cause harm to your soul, I feel like.
So would you agree that it seems like probably one of the most, if not the most, like the most major aspect that is really missing to a lot of religious teachings is that of how to be a sovereign soul, to be a sovereign spirit?
Yeah, the whole idea of the sovereign spirit, I was listening to your chat with Sam about that too, and I had some thoughts around that too, because it's just about with raising children specifically, because there's that balance of being like, I want them to, like, you know, what I feel like, to be a sovereign individual, you need to have like a parent's guidance is important. Because if you just automatically are like, okay, my kid's sovereign, they can do whatever they want, you know, cause that's kind of what it is, right? Being sovereign means that you have freedom, and you can take care of your own. Basically, you have full responsibility over the things that you value, the things that you know, the things that you want, things. And I think, there's a balance there, and I know you would agree with me, where kids, like, our job is to guide them in the direction. I think that's, I don't want to, you know, go back to kind of Christianity or anything too much, but I think that's what the point is that it's like an anchor towards living a certain virtuous way that can be fulfilling for you. And so I think a lot of that is in principles, right? Like how you treat other people, the energies that you put out there, and stuff like that. So,
yeah, there is absolutely value in our experience as people living, you know, on Earth for an extended period of time, longer than our kids. There's one thing that kind of keeps coming up, just as an example, being that, you know, kids, if you would let them sit and watch TV all day, a lot of them would play.
My girls would. Exactly. They would.
Right.
They'd get bored eventually, but
right.
Yeah, right. There's a temptation to that, right? To be like, cause my girls would be like, oh, Peppa Pig. And they could sit there watching it for hours if we let them, hours on
right.
hand.
Right. But
they wouldn't feel good about it.
Right. Yeah. And so we have experience as the parent to know that those things aren't in line with our higher self. And, you know, it's kind of like, I would equate it to an addiction like anything else. It's taking you away from spirit. It's taking you away from your soul. And it's just pushing around a bunch of chemicals in your brain that make you think that you're happy.
And it's tempting because it feels good, right? Just like,
exactly. Right. Yeah. You would definitely want them to be sovereign. You definitely want them to be able to do what they want to do. However, there are things that you feel like you need to protect them from, because it's easy for them to kind of fall into like a trap maybe it's kind of like when you go off to college, when you're first released from the household, it's like, I don't have any more rules. I'm going to go and do all those things that I had rules against all the time. So I also know and understand that a lot of the lessons that I've learned in my life have come from me doing the things that I wasn't allowed to do as a child, because, you know, I had rules around them. My parents wouldn't let me do them. But then once I was given the freedom, once I was out of the house, well, it's like, okay, I'm going to go and do them now. And then I ended up learning the lesson on my own.
It's almost like trust. It's almost like the secret would be trusting your kids and allowing them to make mistakes, right?
Right.
We all know that the best way of learning is through ourselves making mistakes and doing things and trying things, right? And I think that's true for our kids. And I think that's why you're right, where you can go too far one way with too many rules and too much, you know, almost like a military style household. And, and a lot of times you get complete rebellion at a certain age from your kids when you do that. And
yeah,
it goes the other way, right?
Totally. I was just thinking recently about how sometimes my two-year-old and my wife and I will get into these flows where we're in this really controlling parental flow. And as a result, he's in a very rebellious flow. So, you know, it perpetuates itself. So if we don't give him the freedom to do like one silly little thing that doesn't matter, let's say open the cupboard and pull all of his little plastic cups out. Okay, there we've kind of infringed upon his sovereignty, and now he's going to try to do something else. And it's almost like it starts to escalate on both ends. And even though he like continues to maybe want to do things that are trivial, we keep restricting to the point where he just like, he doesn't even have, he gets so frustrated in himself that he just gives up. I don't know where I was going with that.
Is your son very physical? Like, is he very, like, does he explore, like, does he like to explore or climb things?
Yeah.
Do a lot of physical things?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think that's in one thing, having a son, I think is, especially in this age, is important. And I have a lot of nephews. I have four nephews and I know two of them are already in public school. And I know that's one of my nephews is very physical. And I think that's a natural thing for a boy. Is that's how we learn, right? Is through interacting with our environment and seeing how things break, what I mean? It's almost like, we hit things with stuff and we, you know,
yeah,
not all,
exactly.
But, and I think we, as a society, we, especially in like the public school system, we kind of like guide away from that. We teach away from that. Like, oh, don't do that. That's not good. But I think allowing them to learn the way that they are designed to learn is important. So giving them the room, right? So I think a boy that is very physical and very, likes to just test his environment all the time, that's clearly the way that boy learns or that child learns. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the types of children that get the most, that basically are deterred the most in this modern education system, because that's very, you're taught that you're bad, or that, oh, your son's got a problem. He's super, you know, what do they call it? ADD, which really just means your kid's got a lot of energy, which is like,
right.
That's a natural thing. Right.
Right.
I feel like a lot of boys like that back, I like to think back to ancestrally what we would have done. And I think a lot of boys, they would have had an outlet, right? It's like, okay,
right.
These boys are really physical. Put them in the Spartan school, right? Like they're going to be the warriors or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
and
now we don't have that. So it's just like, oh, your kid's got a problem. He can't sit down at his desk all day and listen to the teacher. And it's like, of course you can't. That's not, that's not the type of,
that's not. Do you realize what you're trying to make them do? Yeah.
So I think, you know, you having a young son, I mean, I'm sure that's something that's on your mind, but I think allowing him to, not to be that helicopter parent, not to be like, oh my God, don't do that. You're going to break that. Don't do this. It's like, allow him to make the mistake and he's going to hurt himself. That's the thing. Right. And that's the best way to learn. He's going to fall. He's going to hit his head. He's going to, maybe he'll break a bone one time and he'll be like, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
When I make a mistake. Right.
Yeah. And also not being like in the sort of I told you so attitude, but in like an accepting and loving way. So it's like, because I think what happens is if he's out rollerblading and he breaks his wrist or something like that, and you said, yeah, I told you you shouldn't have been going so fast or something like this. Now he's going to be forever scared of going way too fast. But instead, it's just like, because you're kind of telling him that I told you should have trusted me instead of you and trusting yourself and your own excitement and passion to go and go super fast on your rollerblades, because I'm right about everything. And, you know, so they're always going to be seeking that guidance and relying on it more and more and more. Whereas if you just kind of approach it with acceptance, where it's like, this happens, you know, this is just what happens when you rollerblade, you know, this is kind of the risk that we take. Mm. And, you know,
and also I think with young kids too, it's important to validate, because their emotions and their feelings are so, you know, there is no walls, there's nothing to stop them, right? So it's like, and my wife's really big on this, and she's taught me a lot about this, about, you know, just validating their feelings, being like, if he hurts himself, he falls in his rollerblades and he's really hurt, it's like, yeah, ow, that really, you know, it really hurts to fall on our and scrape right. our knees or to, you know, and validating how much that, how shitty that is. And I think that helps them kind of like take that experience and learn from it, right? It's like, okay, you know, it hurts when you do fun things. Like, that's the thing, there's a risk to everything, right? If you want to do something fun, there's a chance you can get hurt, usually, like, for the most part. Let's, you know, there's that other side of it, right? So it's important for them to learn that
and I think there's something to be said about letting them play and explore when the risk is so much lower. You know, if I let my kid, I don't know if this is a good example or not, we'll see where it goes, but if I let my kid run around the pool when he's 2 years old and he can only run at like a mile an hour, you know, he falls and smacks his head, it's going to leave a big goosebump, but it's not going to do like major damage. Whereas, you know, if I restrict that lesson from him for his entire life, and then all of a sudden he's 18, he's like, I can run at the pool, my parents aren't here anymore. And then he's going to run, and he's going to be running like 15 miles an hour, and he's going to fall, and he's going to crack his skull, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's something that kids learn as they get older. Right. And that's the thing is, you know, they're going to take risks. I think that's one thing that me and my wife talk about too, about like, you know, as a parent, it's such an interesting thing because you want to protect them from everything. Right. But we know that you can't. Like, no. That's what it is. It's like being a parent is so crazy because it really is taking your heart and it's like taking it outside your body. And it's like, it's something else now.
Yeah.
And you love it more than anything else, right? It's like, it's separate from you now. So you want to protect it. You want to keep it safe. You don't want them to feel the pains and the sorrows of life and all the setbacks that they're going to have. But you know that inevitably that those are the things that are going to make them stronger, right? So it's like that letting go of the control a little bit. I feel like that's, as parents, as our kids are growing, we're also growing to try to learn to let go of control over them, right? Like, they're slowly, like, and our job is to make them, like you were talking about, a sovereign individual. Like, you want them to be self-sufficient and smart and critical thinking and you know, everything that you would see as a, you know, strong, successful adult. You want them, that's how you want them to turn out. So it's like, it's our job to make them sovereign. That I think that's where I would push back, is that not so much that our children at a young age are sovereign individuals, because they're not yet. Our job is to make them so, is to guide them into sovereignty.
So what I wanted to add on the topic of sovereignty is that what it comes down to is trust in yourself and trust in your ability to be in this world and to do what you want to do and follow your heart and follow your intuition. And I think that if we as parents show that I trust you, I trust that you know what is best for you, then they see us as their guide in this world. We are everything that they look up to. And, you know, if we see that we trust them, then, because they already inherently trust us, right?
Yeah.
And so if they see that we, the people that they trust the most, trust them in return, then they learn that they can trust themselves.
100%. Yeah, I think that's really important. The fact that, yeah, no, what you just said is a really important part of parenting is like you're right. Like when they are born, like they're everything for a long time. And then slowly they, gain a sense of self and their confidence in themselves is really important as they get older. So when they see you putting trust in them, that gives them confidence, right? To face the world. So I think that's really, really important. Yeah. Is to trust your kids. And also, and to one thing I want to, for my girls, I want them to know, because I feel like our culture is very much like, failing, this fear of failure.
Yeah.
And I think I grew up, me and my wife both talk about how many things we didn't do that we would have wanted to do that we stopped, didn't do because of fear of failure. And I want to teach my girls I want them to know that failure is a good thing because that means you're learning. Right. So that's a tough one because you don't want to see your kids fail, obviously, but we all know that that's how you learn, by failing. So I want them to know, to almost, you can feel the fact that failure in a time it feels shameful or feels bad, but there's always growth from it. So that's a big thing I would want my girls to have that I didn't have when I grew up. I think I stopped so many things in my life due to fear of not being good enough or not being successful at it or failing at it. So that's what makes really successful people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of approaching the end here, so I want to ask you the question that I've been asking everybody at the end of these interviews, which is, as a parent, I believe anyway, and I think you would agree that we learn just as much from our kids as they learn from us. So what would you say that up to this point has been the most important lesson that you've learned from your kids?
Wow, that's a great question. Tough question.
So many things, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably the biggest thing I've learned from them is to never wish. There's always this tendency to like want to wish that you're in a different point in your life or that you're through a hard point or that you're past a certain. I think what they've taught me is to just be so, like, I find myself when I'm with them sometimes, especially during those hard times too, when you're distracted or you're, not in a good place, I almost try to imagine myself, force myself to be like in that way in the future when they're all grown up and they've left the home or whatever. And I imagine myself a time traveler back in time being like, just to really enjoy every single moment with them because it's all fleeting. It's like my youngest was going through this phase where she was waking up like, three or four times in the night and coming into her room. And we had this whole thing where it was just like, we had terrible sleep for a while and we tried to put her back and, it's always just like, oh my God, she's so terrible. What's going on? But it's like just to enjoy every single moment because that's like I just imagine my being in the future when they don't sit on my lap and I don't read to them and they don't, they're doing their own thing. And so it's just trying to take every single moment with them as a gift and as a blessing and to just that's the biggest thing I would say overall thing that they've taught me is to really be in the moment and
Be present, yeah.
be present. Yeah, exactly. To be present. Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. I appreciate that. Hurley, where can people find you if they want to reach out and connect with you?
I'm on Twitter at Hurley Burt, HurleyBurt. Name is Hurley B. I can be found on there. I just got Noster. I don't really know what I'm doing on it, but I don't know. I'll probably post my public key on Twitter for anyone to follow me on there. And that's about it. That's the only social media I have. I've gotten rid of Facebook. I've gotten rid of Instagram. I'm keeping it simple.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for talking with me today, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again soon.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation, Caleb. Thanks so much for inviting me, and hopefully we can do it again.
Awesome.